From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For decades, universities across America have been anchors for local economies, providing jobs and a steady stream of customers for local businesses. But for some universities and college towns, that is changing. Enrollment is declining at regional colleges. People have pointed to lower birth rates, funding cuts, and other factors. In Illinois, that national trend was exacerbated by the two-year budget crisis Governor Bruce Rauner and the General Assembly inflicted on the state. Western Illinois University in the town of Macomb have been particularly affected. Western's student body has shrunk by roughly half since 2010. That's resulted in layoffs on campus and in town. Some businesses are struggling, and everyone in the community is trying to figure out what the future could hold. Joining me now to talk about this are Dr. Russell Weinstein, an economist and professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He's also the co-author of the paper, Do Universities Improve Local Economic Resilience? Russell, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And also with us is Dr. Holly Stovall, a former women's studies professor at Western. She was laid off during the Rauner budget crisis. Holly, welcome to you as well. Thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
And listeners, you can join the conversation throughout the first part of our show today on this at 800-222-9455. What do you think is behind the struggles of schools like Western Illinois University? What do you think is the value of regional universities here? And what do you think should be done, if anything, to strengthen these schools and their communities? The number again is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, Holly Stovall, I'm going to start with you. How would you describe Macomb for somebody who hasn't been there before or maybe just hasn't been there in decades?
Well, it has a lot of strengths, but it's always a place of tension because it's it was founded as a military tract after the Mexican-American War, and so that soldiers were given a place to live. So we have that kind of military history, and also a very agricultural history. And also, you know, it's currently we're surrounded by cornfields. We also have a downtown square where Abraham Lincoln spoke. And then we also have this century-long rich history of a university. So, or, you know, the higher education anyway. So it's also a very affordable place to live. The taxes are reasonable. The schools have been strong. Our students from Macomb High School do very well. They can get into the Ivy League. They can get into prestigious places like University of Chicago. Usually someone does. So there are a lot of strengths, but there's also, I feel like, some very aspects of the town that are stuck and that do rely on the stimulation of the university. So that the university used to keep things fresh. It used to keep people coming in, mostly professors, but all kinds of people, so that ideas were always bubbling up. We could support, for example, an international film festival that was jointly supported by the university and the town, sort of a town and gown type program that would fill up. So when you went, this would fill up the theater when you went to the film festival. So that was a point that everyone could talk about and always new ideas coming up.
How have you seen that change in recent decades?
Well, we don't support the International Film Festival anymore. So that there is not really a common point of dialogue anymore, in my experience. Now, what I find in Macomb is that, you know, I'm kind of the dissenting voice, also maybe the one willing to dissent. but we don't support this International Film Festival, so we don't necessarily have that common point of conversation. which I miss, because it was that the ideas that would come about in the festival were usually supported curiosity and diversity, different ways of thinking. So that was a way of building community that wasn't just rooted in military and agriculture.
And I
I'd
want to
rather.
bring, and sorry to interrupt, I want to bring Dr. Weinstein in just a second, but do you think the International Film Festival is that emblematic of sort of a larger break that's happening between the school and the community?
Yes, definitely. And I could name more examples of how we struggle to support that integration anymore. And I first moved to Macomb in 1987. So, I have seen many changes in Macomb and WIU, but this has been the most extreme point now.
Well, Russell Weinstein, let me bring you into the conversation. Now, from your perspective as an economist, how does what we've heard is happening in Macomb fit into the bigger picture of colleges across Illinois and across the country?
Yeah, great. Thanks so much again for having me. And it's great to be on the show. So my co-authors and I have done a number of research projects now that have been motivated by hearing things, hearing anecdotes as well as reading newspaper articles about the role that universities have been playing in their local communities. And we were interested in seeing whether that was true sort of across the board on average in the US in the past several decades using very rich data sets from a variety of sources. And so we have a couple of projects that have looked at the impact that these universities are having in their local communities in the past decades and not in these most recent few years. And what we've seen in the past is that these regional universities have helped make their local economies more resilient to negative labor demand shocks, for example, manufacturing decline and manufacturing exposure, and have also increased economic and social mobility for children who are growing up nearby and next to these regional universities. And so it does look like across the board on average across the United States that these universities have had these very positive impacts on their local communities. And I think, a number of things have changed in recent years in higher education, sort of in line with what Professor Stovall has said, in that we've seen actually a decrease in enrollment in the post-secondary education sector in the past 15 years. And that has come alongside a decrease, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, in the number of 18-year-olds, for example, that would be of college-going age. And that this link between sort of demographic changes and enrollments is strongest at universities that are classified as being less research intensive, and so more likely to be in these regional university categories.
Holly, tell us what has happened in Macomb and at Western in the years since the budget crisis when you were laid off.
Oh, well, that's been traumatic. I think I was in the first rounds of layoffs. I learned about my layoff in December 2015. I was getting tenure right at the same time. I was applying, and so I would get like a tenure letter from whatever level of administration, congratulations. And then next, I would get a layoff letter. And like literally, I got these letters in intervals laid off, tenured, laid off, tenured. So, that was very traumatic for me. But of course, since then, many people have been laid off. I think it was, and that creates a lot of, I think, depression on both sides. Because for me, I was depressed very long. It's my contract ended in 2017, and I'm in the gig economy now. So in Chicago, and the gig economy means that I just like take whatever class I could find. I did get another degree. I got an MFA in creative writing. But because of where I am in life, I'm not as eligible for these newer tenure track jobs. And higher ed has changed too, and I'm not as In some ways, I'm a little stressed out about higher ed with its with AI and its reliance on student evaluations. So a lot of people were, a lot of professors who should be full professors by now, like me, were kind of thrown into this unstable gig economy where we don't even know what we'll be teaching from one semester to the next. I've taught so many different preps since then. I have a lot of degrees, so when somebody asks me to teach something that I can conceivably teach, I do. So that's kind of my end. People just kind of being scattered because they were laid off. And then breaking up families, that was very common.
Well,
But
and I
then on
understand
the other
if I
side,
may, I understand your husband still works at Western, and I wonder if you can share what he has seen, what he says about what's happening there.
yeah, I want to talk about that. So the people who stayed, there is a lot of survivor's guilt. That's one side of it. You know, they feel bad that they kept their jobs, and people have told me that personally, some people that in my department. But also they are strained because more work is put on them because there's fewer, each year there's fewer and fewer faculty to cover these classes. So like my husband is also a professor of economics, and they still have that major. So they still, to have a major, you still have to cover the classes. So more and more work and responsibility is put on him. And I think there's just one other economist at this point. They just hired two economists last year. So that's the other thing that WIU has been doing that's really stressful for departments and families on both sides. Is they hire somebody and then lay them off after they've worked a year. Because then you can't get to know your colleagues. It's hard to develop community. And then, of course, it's just more work for the people who stay.
Let me share again. If you want to join our conversation today, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We got a call from Peter in Winnebago. He couldn't stay on the line, but I do want to share his sort of a synopsis of what he had to say. He said that there are so many jobs that artificial intelligence cannot do, right? If you think of like electricians, for example. And he wonders if they could be trained at these universities, and that could be a way of getting enrollment back up. Russell, I wonder if you can speak to that, or if there's been any sort of thought of, the mix of offerings at these universities in terms of their ability to attract students and remain relevant in this, despite the struggles that you were outlining earlier.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting comment. So one thing that we do see also based on other research that I've done is that, and research that others have done as well, is that universities do appear responsive to labor demand shocks, universities and students. So in the past, when there has been an increase in demand for people with certain skills in certain occupations or in certain industries, we do see that students and universities respond by increasing offerings and increasing likelihood of enrolling in certain majors within the university to meet that growing demand.
And let me ask you, your university, Russell, your research also looks at how universities affect sort of the broader local economy and resilience. Talk about how a town like Macomb is really intertwined with, or maybe even you'd say reliant on, Western Illinois University to thrive economically or even to survive.
Sure. So I think about universities helping their local economies be more resilient in a couple of ways. And we look at both of these in our paper. So one is that so in the past, when there have been sort of negative labor demand shocks like exposure to manufacturing decline, the university itself has been resilient to that negative labor demand shock. So there's some shock to some industry, but the university itself is not in that industry. And so it's like having a large business that's in an industry that's not affected by this shock. And so one thing that we do see in our paper is that a lot of the resilience that these local universities provide in terms of resilience of income or employment or population comes through the resilience of the university's expenditures in the local market. So even though you know, that certain industries are undergoing a negative labor demand shock, the university expenditure itself is resilient. And you know, I think that's important, especially in this current conversation, because you know, most of our studies have looked at negative labor demand shocks or negative shocks in industries where the university might be less exposed. But but now we're seeing, you know, instances in which universities are experiencing a negative shock in the sense that there are just fewer 18-year-olds who would be of college-going age. And so the resilience that that they may be able to provide through resilient expenditures in the local economy that then have spillover effects to all kinds of local services might be less. So that's one channel. And the other
let me ask you to pause there because we are on a fixed clock. We need to take a break on the program and we'll pick up where we left off. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're talking about the ongoing struggles of sort of regional universities, what we call the directional schools in here in Illinois, particularly through the lens of Western Illinois University, which was recently featured in the Wall Street Journal as sort of a poster child for struggling regional schools. We'll talk more about this after a short break. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. A recent headline in the Wall Street Journal said, America's college towns go from boom to bust. And to tell this story, the journal went to Macomb. That is the dateline. And the story says, Macomb is at the heart of a new rust belt. Across the U.S., colleges are faltering, and so are the once booming towns around them. Of course, the college in Macomb is Western Illinois University. We're talking about the ongoing struggles of that school, not to single it out or pick on it, but as the Wall Street Journal did, but as emblematic of something that's happening across Illinois and really across the country. We are talking about this with Dr. Holly Stovall, a former professor of women's studies at Western Illinois University, and Dr. Russell Weinstein, economics professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Holly, I know there's been a lot, there have been so many words spilled in so many articles about college students today, right? AI, phones. Setting that aside, I wonder, you know, what have you heard from your spouse and others you may still be in touch with about the particular, you know, students at Western, at schools like Western, how they have been affected by what's happening here?
Well, I was one of the first ways they were affected is by losing women's studies and African American studies, which was a real kind of tragedy or shame, just really sad because they were recruiting, they were specifically targeting students from areas in the south and west sides of Chicago that were largely populated by African Americans and Latine people. So at the same time they're recruiting and diversifying the student body, they're defunding and closing the programs and the majors that those students might have found or did find very meaningful. So women's studies, women's and gender studies, for example, is an intersectional discipline that emphasizes diversity of ethnicity and all kinds of diversity, diversity of gender and sexuality. And so we serve, like three-fourths of my students were students of color. And we did a really good job serving those students. We had high enrollment. We made a profit for the university. By some calculations, we made the highest profit for the university or program. So our enrollment was very high and very effective. So the first thing that happened to those students is they lost that opportunity to kind of make meaning of their lives and understand their lives in that context of women's studies and African American studies. But after that, you know, they're seeing more They're having to take more classes online. They're seeing more students in the classroom who do not come in prepared as the college students, or students who will come in and play YouTube videos right on their laptop or right on their phone as if they were in their dorm room or someone's living room. Like they don't even bother to put headphones on. They just play their music for everyone. There's that kind of it's a difference in the attention in the classroom. When they get to be juniors and seniors, they're good students. They're real privileged to teach. But the freshmen became more and more challenging to teach.
Course, a lot of the freshmen probably don't become juniors and seniors, right? College completion is one of those not as much discussed stories of higher education in America. I don't know if you can speak to that briefly.
I agree. I think so. I don't have the data, but I do think that there are students that are recruited who really don't have the background and resources and preparation to stay there for 4 years, and WIU has not been able to provide them the extra support that they need.
Right, that's key. Russell Weinstein, what sort of policy changes might help universities like Western, towns like Macomb, to adapt to this reality we've been talking about?
I think these are really difficult policy and policy questions that are also really important just because of the impact they have on individuals and on society more generally. Like many funding decisions, there are trade-offs involved. And so I think it's a difficult environment, especially with limited budgets. And so I think there are a couple of things. So one is that in our research, we hope that it's helpful to policymakers in at least quantifying one dimension of the benefits of regional public universities to their local communities. That's often discussed as an important benefit in that they're anchor institutions. But there's also lots of great evidence out there on the impact of more research-intensive universities on their local communities, as well as sort of more generally, not just looking at the impacts on local communities, but also the impacts on the people who enroll and their outcomes post-graduation. And so I think it's really important, especially in this environment, for policymakers to look at all of that evidence to think about the trade-offs when they're trying to decide where to fund or where to increase funding. I just want to pick up on one other thing that was brought up in the previous discussion in terms of college completion rates. So, I think we've seen a decrease in enrollment in the U.S. in higher education over the last 15 years. That's come alongside a decrease in the college age population. But there have been other instances in history, in recent history, where there's been a decline in college 18-year-olds who would be of the age of going to college that has not come alongside a decrease in higher education enrollments. And so I think there are a couple of avenues that might be important for universities or policymakers to consider, which is if you could increase the percent of people who are going to college or increase the percent of people who are completing college, who are starting it, or reaching students who are non-traditional students or might be coming from other areas. So I think there are areas that could be considered, though, it's certainly a difficult environment.
Yeah, I'm reminded your comments about trade-offs. Was it Thomas Sowell who said there are no solutions, only trade-offs? Holly, let me ask you about that. There is a move afoot. I don't know if it's going to pass, but there is a legislation in Springfield that would allocate new funding more heavily towards schools like Western, as an example. I wonder what you think about that and what else you might like to see the state or even the university do differently to address some of these challenges.
I appreciate that question. I think that funding comes before enrollment. And at WIU, our funding began to be reduced before the enrollment went down. Or Marilyn Robinson, who is she has taught at the Iowa Writers' Workshop for decades, and they asked her, why Iowa? Why does this have the most competitive creative writing program in the world? And she said, it's nothing about Iowa, it's just that we got funding. So, in other words, the funding comes first. And then if you withdraw the funding, then the enrollment comes down. And this side of it has been hidden under this kind of panicky cry, oh, there's going to be less students. There's going to be less students graduating. And that's become the dominant story. And so all these other factors have been hidden under that. So I think that the state can go back to kind of its original ideas to educate the population, to help them become more thoughtful citizens, more thoughtful workers. And you cannot really treat the university like a marketplace because the demand goes up and down, and education doesn't work that way. It just, you can't be hiring, firing, and back and forth. It really lowers the quality of the classroom. And I just want to say that WIU historically, you know, because I have said I went there. Well, I didn't say that, but I did go there, and so did my husband. WIU has historically been able to provide a high quality classroom experience that is somewhere between, say, the liberal arts college and U of I. So our classrooms are smaller than the ones of U of I, maybe a little bit bigger than a liberal arts classroom. But all of my classes were heavy on dialogue and the thought process. And that is something AI cannot do. You know, AI cannot read our brain yet. But I think that's really important, that not only that we're aware of our thought process, but that we shape our thought process through discussion and dialogue. And WIU at its best has offered that and can continue to offer that. Maybe I don't really have a problem with kind of teaching in a trade. I think that's a good thing to do, but I think that the kind of humanities and the liberal arts and sciences, those are classic disciplines, and if taught in a conversation and a dialogue, that's probably the heart of what it means to educate people. Although we also have to keep talking about what it means to educate, what an education is in the you know, era of AI.
Well, Holly Stovall, Russell Weinstein, thank you so much for sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st Show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.